privacy and security and freedom all kind of go hand in hand. It basically comes down to using proxies for everything. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
I'm here at Consensus 2019 with Jamison Lopp, who is the CTO of Kaza. Thanks so much for chatting with me.
Anytime.
So I wanted to talk about the Kaza ethos of individual sovereignty. This is something that your company really just drills down on, the importance of that. Why do you think that this is important?
Well, it's important because it's hard. We've had this idea in Bitcoin since inception of being your own bank. However, what we found is that it's too difficult for the average person. There's a very, very high learning curve that needs to be scaled in order to understand all of the complexities that go along with the security of keeping your private keys actually private and away from attackers. The first product that we actually offered was a key management service, and that's a multi-sig vault style product where we're leveraging hardware devices that are already on the market, Trezor, Ledger, etc. Once you have, you know, geographically dispersed sets of keys, that protects you not only against attackers but also against a variety of different types of loss due to natural disaster. You know, EMP protection, that is just one of many, many different attacks or at least loss vectors that can happen that most people just don't think about. And so we are trying to build hardware and software products and services that have those protections built into them. One of the pieces of being sovereign in the system is maintaining your own keys. That's what that first solution was about. The next piece, though, is if you want to operate with the strongest security model where you're not trusting other third parties to not lie to you, then you need to run a fully validating node on the network. And that node is basically acting as a sentry. You know, they are acting as an auditor and making sure that no one is breaking the rules that you have agreed to by using a Bitcoin protocol. And a lot of people don't bother to do this because the downside is that when we're asking people to run a full node, what we're really saying is we want you to become a server administrator. And very few people want to even put in the time required to understanding various networking and IT management complexities. So we have once again tried to lower the bar, lower the technical requirements to be able to operate a node in this environment. And we've gotten to the point where we can ship a box to you, you just plug in a few cables and wait a few minutes and then pull up basically a web app where you can then have an administrative dashboard to see what's going on with your node, to use the Bitcoin and Lightning wallets within the node and use them in a way that you are no longer trusting anyone else on the network.
Forcing a very complex system into a simple setup like that, I can imagine it was a long process.
There are, of course, many things that can go wrong, but we've built this system to be as robust as possible and try to recover from software failures, though, you know, there are still the occasional hardware failures. We even believe that just as a result of international shipping, we get a lot of hardware damage, but at a more common level, most of it is networking complexities and the fact that we're shipping a device off that is going to be installed in an environment that we have no idea what it's like. And I would say in the majority of cases, it works fine, no problem. But there are a variety of edge cases that we've run into where users may be running a router that is different enough from most other routers that it's hard for them to get it to open up, to basically talk to from outside of their home network. We've even encountered issues where, for a variety of reasons, the user doesn't even have a public IP address, or they have a public IP address and it changes all the time, and that screws things up. And we actually just rolled out Tor support in the past few weeks, spent a lot of time on that, and we did this not just because we like the privacy improvements, but it turns out that Tor actually solves a lot of networking complexities. You can completely bypass a lot of these issues when you're talking over the Tor network. it just works. The addressing just works. It gives you security and encryption that just works.
There's more surveillance than ever. There's more overreach than ever. It is getting harder and harder for a person to live what I would call a free life, and to do things where they have control over their own choices. So, like, what are some suggestions that you would give to people for just, like, incremental improvements?
Privacy and security and freedom all kind of go hand in hand. I wrote a very lengthy article about my own journey into extreme privacy last year. I mean, it basically comes down to using proxies for everything. And so that may be straightforward from a computer standpoint of using VPNs and Tor and whatnot. But then, like, on the financial side, using proxies so that, you know, your real financial accounts are hidden behind other layers so that your real name is not associated with your day-to-day activities or physical location or whatever, but rather using legal entities or other friends, family, or hired help, basically, to undertake the actual interactions that may leak sensitive data.
It seems like it's a big trade-off, convenience for security and privacy. And as soon as you start trying to live a life that is more private, that's not an easy feat. How do we convince people that this is an undertaking worth taking, that this is something that is important and will make their lives better?
It is a difficult thing. Now, we can talk about things like the inevitability of data breaches. Information wants to be free. And, you know, what are the possible consequences of that? If you imagine the worst case scenario and how much trouble it would be to clean that up, and then compare it to how much trouble and resources you have to put into prevention, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I think of it as an insurance policy. So everyone has, you know, their own risks that they need to evaluate what might happen. But it's also difficult this day and age to evaluate some of the risks of being exposed, because it's very easy to accidentally attract unwanted attention because of how information is disseminated these days. It's very easy to do or say something that, for example, goes viral, and you, one day you're a nobody, and the next day you have millions of people who are focusing their attention on you.
What do you say to the detractors who say that all of this is overkill?
I would say that, you know, I'm not operating to work well in the day-to-day case. I'm operating, you know, to be protected against the worst case scenario. It is true that most people will probably be able to go through their lives without taking any extreme privacy protections, and they'll be fine. But it's also true that a lot of people will not. And so you don't know what that is going to be. And so it's just a sort of better safe than sorry type of situation. It's the same reason why, like, in the Bitcoin ecosystem, because we think very adversarially about things, we don't want to get into an edge case situation that was deemed to be highly unlikely, but ends up happening and ends up, you know, causing a catastrophe and causing a lot of damage.
Better be safe than sorry. It seems to be the ethos. Well, I really appreciate your time and all of the efforts you are making at CASA to give people back individual sovereignty. I think it's a really important endeavor. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.